It's the 23rd of September 2002, and Miss Nink Burns is speaking at her home in Redfern Street, Subiaco, with Anne Rogers.
I was born at Nurse Harvey's Hospital in East Perth on the 19th of December 1921 to Thomas Alexander Burns and Gertrude Ann Burns.
Thanks, Miss Burns. And your full name?
Nita Florence Burns.
Thanks. Miss Burns, do you know when your grandparents first came to Subiaco? And, well, first, of course, who were they? Your father's parents, that is.
William Burns was my grandfather, and Alexander McKinnon Burns was my grandmother. And I think they came in, as far as I can work out, in 1897 to Subiaco from Daresford in Victoria.
Do you know what brought them?
No, they never ever discussed. I mean, we were only children then, so they never ever sort of, we probably didn't take it in. But they came over to Subiaco in that year.
And where did they settle?
In Subiaco, in Catherine Street, 25 Catherine Street, which was called Hepburn.
Was the name significant, do you think?
I don't really know. I've always wanted to call my place Hepburn, but I've never got around to that.
Yeah, and what did your grandfather do?
Well, see, I never ever saw him or had any. He was died very young, died at 57. And I think he died before, probably before I was born.
Did he start the bakery up?
Well, my family never ever talked much, my parents didn't talk much about the bakery, but well, from what I can gather, they, I don't know whether they started or not, but they either bought into it or started it, because I can never find out where the brown came from.
Oh. Presumably that was a partner.
Yeah, well, I've never ever heard a word about nobody in the family now even knows where the brown came from. Mind you, there's not many of them left.
Miss Burns, you said your grandparents lived in Catherine Street. Did they own other property as well?
Well, most of the property they owned was in Catherine Street, but I think there's a United Kingdom church or something. And they owned, say, three or four blocks. It was a very big, not quite down to Railway Road, but quite a few blocks. And they had all these lovely sheds down the back with the old horse and buggies in them. Three or four of them where we used to love to get down and sit in them, not that we could ever go out in them. But my father had a photography room down the back where we weren't allowed in. And beside the house, they had lots of grapevines growing. And there were two or three quite large blocks, I'd say. And then the bakery was on virtually on the other side of the road, the horse stables, and that went down to Hay Street. And the actual bakery was, there was an empty block on that corner, and then the bakery was a couple of shops and then the bakery. But that was then called Broome Street and changed to Hay Street after.
So the bakery was quite convenient to Hepburn.
My grandmother took all the phone calls originally for the bakery. She was a very fine, there's a word like astute woman, very businesslike and very good living, honest. She was lovely.
And does Hepburn still survive?
Hepburn,
the house?
No, Hepburn House was demolished by Tip Top. Somebody rented it for a while, but then Tip Top bought all that land there, and that's eventually where part of the market's parking is now. What's that? It was just lovely. We used to love to go down there and get down the back into the horse the carts and get up and sit there and think we were heading for the bush or something, but they were really lovely. And she had, I suppose she had about four more or less garages or rooms down there. It would, you know, it was a big property she was on.
And after your grandfather died, she managed that on her own, or she had servants?
No, she stayed there on her own. She had one son who was partly blind, and he lived with her. But he didn't work because he couldn't see. He was one of my dad's, be about third youngest brother, I think, but he was blind, and I never ever found out whether he got blind at the war or what. But he was a woman, was a bit of a character, really.
Character in what way?
Oh, well, he used to tease all the children, you know, we all used to get annoyed with him. But just to go down there on a Sunday, my grandmother, as I told you, used to shop in town and have her butter and all that sent out. And she had this lovely pantry, which I can remember to this day, had a red notice with silver print on it. And we used to go to this pantry to try and pinch some cheese. And it always had, "Christ is the head of this house, the unseen guest at every meal, the silent listener to every conversation." And we'd shut the door and go. That was it. But we would have been in trouble.
When you said she used to shop in town and have the food sent out, which town? Do you mean Perth?
She used to go to Perth every Friday with Mrs. Perdue, whose husband was the head of police at the time. And as I think we used to, coming from school on a Friday, go through the town looking for them, because whenever they were always in a cafe having afternoon tea, and she always says, "Hello, dear, here's 2 shillings to go and buy something." We thought this was fantastic, so we would spend quite a bit of time looking for them in town. So, you know, we'd always get our 2 shillings to spend on a lolly or something. But she was a lovely lady, lovely.
You mentioned that that your father had a partly blind brother. There were other brothers as well, weren't there? How many children were there altogether?
There were 6 boys and 1 girl, 6 brothers. Bob was in the business, Jack was in the business, Dad was in the business, and the girl wasn't in the business, but they were all shareholders in it, you know. Bob died very young at 43, I think with the first appendix operation his father died with the first appendix operation in Perth. And Bob, who was 43, died with paint poisoning in St John's very suddenly. So there were only Dad and Jack virtually working in the business. And Jack was more or less on the production side, and Dad was managing all the staff.
When you say paint poisoning, he'd been doing a lot of painting?
He'd been having the house painted or something, and they couldn't work out what was wrong with him, and he took ill very, you know, suddenly, and he died at 43.
Goodness.
And he only had the one boy, one son, who's still alive in Queensland, and Jack had one boy and 3 girls.
He said, one brother looked after the business side of things and your father was more with the
people. Jack looked after the production side, you know, and all that. And Dad did more the business side, the administration of everything.
And he was very much a people person, I gather.
My dad?
Yes.
Lovely, yeah. They were lovely. All the boys were lovely. Jack were fantastic guys. And Bob was a lot. They were all a great family, really. Very united family. But my dad was into football and he was into trotting. I've still got cuttings from the paper where they tried to change the name from Brennan Park years ago, and he was all for the remaining Brennan Park. And he fought. They had a, what do you have now with the, can't think of the name of it.
What was Brennan Park?
Brennan Park was the name of Gloucester Park before, and there was quite a to-do on to change the name, which eventually they did, but he fought in. What's it they've got now with the police that's on? what's the name, I just can't put...
Commission?
Yeah, they had a royal commission into it. And he got up and stood up for it, but they changed the name anyway. But he was a life member of the Trots, committeeman and a life member. And he was a... played football for Subiaco. Loved going fishing, loved Augusta. Bought two or three blocks down there. And used to love to go there, but he was too sick to... He'd take sick down there and he would come racing back to Perth with a bottle of Digitalis up to his mouth to get home. He'd be in St John's Hospital with a heart attack.
Well, he had a number of heart attacks.
He had a number of heart attacks, yeah. But he was a... Oh, those boys slaved in the bakery, you know. They really worked hard. It's hard work because they're up in the morning, up early and...
When you say early, what? It's something like 2 or 3 in the morning, isn't it?
2 or 3 in the morning. I used to get upset if he went on a holiday. They weren't allowed to employ anyone. So he used to go, the boys used to go in and do it themselves. They had to. And if my dad didn't wake me up to go with him, I would really perform. And I used to go with him and go to the races and cut up all the bread by hand, because it all had to be cut ready for the race meeting. And in those days we didn't have this, we did it by hand until they brought slices in, which was later on. We used to call in at the old markets in Wellington Street, have a cup of tea and a pie about 4 o'clock in the morning, have a chat to the people there and get our eggs if we were lucky, then go on to the races and do all the races bread. No, and then they had to do all the shops. It wasn't house to house, it was shops and hotels and that all had to be served on a holiday, but they weren't allowed to employ people to do it.
That was a government rule, was it?
Yeah.
On holidays, but during the week that was different.
During the week it's all right, but on holidays, no, they had to do all the deliveries themselves to shops and that. But we served practically all the town shops, cafeterias, not everyone, but I'd say 90% of the trade. Had a good relationship with all the hotels, and remember the lattice in the terrace where we used to pop in and have a coffee and something there. But no, we had a lovely, I don't know what you'd call it, had lots of funny things that happened, you know. We used to go to one house in Beaufort Street where we had to go around and wake the people up. Dad used to say, you go around and wake them. I'd go around there and there'd be about a 6-foot picket fence and about 4 dogs, and I'd call out and you couldn't wake them up. So in the finish you'd go back and say, Dad, I can't wake them up. So he'd have to go around and jump the fence to wake them up.
What, they wanted to be woken when the bread arrived?
Well, they had to be there to take the bread inside, you see, and this is early morning. So we'd have to, and I used to go to one place next to the Carlton Hotel in Hay Street in East Perth, and we had to go around the back there, and there were about 4 dogs, and as soon as I got round there they'd all start, so that was good because they would wake the people up. But no, we had some very funny experiences with our early delivery. See, lots of funny things going on.
So that would be Sundays and holidays that you
went
with him?
No, not Sundays, we weren't allowed to deliver Sunday, only public holidays. But the rules today compared with, they bake Sundays, they deliver bread on Sundays, do everything on Sundays.
Yes.
But no, the bakery was good. And it was very big. You know, we had something like, I suppose, about 40 bakers, I suppose, and lots of delivery carts and that. And they used carters, used to all go, have their carts all standing up ready, and then go around to get their horse, and the old horse would plod down the side on the sleepers, because there was only sleepers there in those days, it wasn't like it is today. And the horses would all come one after the other and get in back into their carts to get their loads. And we had one that used to go into Subi, and everybody used to give the driver a cup of tea. And so the horse would wait so long before the woman would let the driver go, or say, you know, come back to his car, that he would go back to the factory and line up for his second load. And wait, and the driver got left to walk back. And we had an instance in Dalkeith where the driver didn't come back, and it was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So my dad went out looking for him, and people had given the driver so much to drink that he was under the tree, the horse had his feed bag on, and the driver was absolutely out to it. But no, we had lots of funny instances. We had a wonderful horse called Snowy, who was getting too old to pull a cart. You know, the carts weren't easy. And we gave him to Clontarf Orphanage, took him way across. And when my dad went to work on Monday morning, no, he went down Sunday, and who should be standing at the gate but Snowy. He'd come all the way back. Beautiful horse. So we didn't part with him again. We just left him stay there.
So when were the horses phased out?
Oh, now. That's a good question.
It was probably gradual.
Yeah, we got rid of all the horses. Well, I wouldn't say we got rid of them. They were phased out and we went mostly to vans, but we still had vans going into the city when we didn't ever send horses and carts into the town. But, no, it's hard to say. I can always remember the horses being a nuisance in Rockaby Road with the trams there, and you had to stop the horse and cart, you know, going up the hill because the tram would stop. And then we had an instance where my dad got thrown out of the cart on the corner of Bagot Road and Rockaby, where the library was then, because they had a horse trough for the horse to drink. And when he took him over for a drink, he got shied out of the cart because there was a woman's body in the trough. She'd obviously been murdered and put in the trough. So we had lots of funny experiences that you don't see today. At sleepers at the side of the bakery where the horses came down from the yards at stables, the stables were at the back, and the wood was always piled up 10 foot high to feed the ovens. But see, they were wood ovens then, and they used to have to get these long 3 foot lengths. So your yard was all piled up with wood, and the horses were on the other side of they had a nice stable in the middle where they came in from their yard to feed and everything. And you'd go down to feed them. So I used to go down a lot and feed them and pull out the chute to let the chaff down from the top. And the horses in here, and they'd all rush in, and you'd get nudged from the back. All I wanted to do was get out then, because they, you know, when there's 10 or 12 and they all rush in together, but they're all hungry, so they rush into wherever you are, and you're trying to get the chute down and all the chaff in. The time you're getting nudged out all the time.
They've been big horses too.
Yeah, well, they were big horses. They had some lovely horses, and they're all, you know, pretty friendly sort. No, we had some very happy times down there. Most of it, we used to go down on a Sunday when Dad fed them, and his brother used to come in. The boys all, you know, worked together. They were. My Uncle Jack was a lovely guy, and after my dad took sick, it really took a toll on him, and he got sick then and sort of couldn't manage. But we had some very. We had the night down there where the safe was blown up in the middle of the night, and they carried about 10 bags of flour and put all round the safe, so as the noise wouldn't. They blew the front off it, but all that was in there, we used to give the drivers $2 change every day in a little packet. So they pulled out the drawers, and all they got was the $2 change for all the drivers.
Was it as recently as dollars, or are you converting there?
Pardon?
Was it as recently as dollars, or were you converting from pounds?
It would be pounds, shillings and pence, £2 in there. Yeah. For their change, and they all collected their bags every day and went out. They all had their name on their bag and went out with their bags and their $2. And then when they came back at night, it was all counted and hidden then.
So all of that work for the safe wasn't for much.
That's right, no. But they really blew up the office, which was in the safe, which was in. Actually, there was a cutting of that in the paper, but they had a photo of it. But it was, in those days, it was, you know, really something. But that's what they did, carried the bags down and bagged the flour all around it, you see, so as it wouldn't
They'd thought about it for a while. So was that in the 50s or earlier? Or
that'd be earlier than the 50s, yeah. That'd be back in the 30s, I'd say.
Oh, yeah. Your father actually went to war, didn't he, before he started in the bakery?
No, he was working at the bakery when he went to war.
Oh, right.
He was in Gallipoli, in the landing, and then he transferred to the Royal Air Force in England, went to Oxford and trained there. Met my mother in England, because the men stayed at the Grand Hotel where my mother was living at the time, and met my mother and her sister, brought his friend along, and they got married at the registry office in England, and the four of them all came back to Perth. We understand on the Frederickshire, I think. But my mother didn't like Perth very much when she first arrived. She was after England, because England was so different. And her mother died very young. And I think there were three girls and two boys there. Her brother was in the Navy. He came out and lived here. Has written his, what's the word? Family tree. His is absolutely beautiful, the way he's done it. And when they came back to Perth, my aunt and her husband went on to a farm and lost everything with the depression, and they came and lived with us here for quite a while. My cousin, who's still alive, is very friend. We're great friends. They were staying with us for a long while to get them through. You know, they had a struggle, real struggle.
Would have been comforting for your mother to have her sister come out here as well.
Pardon?
It would have been comforting for your mother to have her sister come.
Oh, yes, and they were absolute. As you can see, that picture on the wall of them, the two of them coming out of London Court. No, they were very, very close, very close. So, and she lost one of her children coming from the farm in a buggy, lost a child, but then had another daughter, Pat, who's very much into the history of Subiaco too, and goes back and said, oh, your family and your grandparents were wonderful to me. Your grandmother got me a job in Bowens when I couldn't get a job anywhere, because it was very hard. She said, your grandmother was like a mother to me. But we were all very united, you know. Mum's sister was always here, and her husband, he was lovely. He was a major in the army. And very fine, upstanding,
mm-hmm.
Lovely man. We've had a very lucky family life, really. We've all been very close, and we're still all very close.
You mentioned that your mother's sister came to live during the Depression. Did the Depression impact on your family and the bakery very much?
Well, yeah, I'd say, I mean, we weren't by any means rich. I can remember going to school in my father's army coat cut down for me. And I mean, we weren't flourishing, but I suppose we were lucky in, I think my father, as managing director, was getting £4 a week.
Oh.
£4 a week, because I found bits of paper, you know, in the closet, I suppose you'd call it. And it goes right back to, you know, the olden days, and receipts for the piano, we had a pianola, which was cost 10 shillings a week or something, you know. So we had lots of happy times around the piano, because my uncle, that was with Dad, was a great singer, and Dad's sister was a great singer, so they always used to sing at Christmas, the Holy City, around the pianola. It was beautiful.
And the whole family would gather around.
Yes. No, we're a very united family. I've got one of Uncle Jack's daughters is in America and one's in Melbourne, and I correspond with them still, but see, we're all getting on. We're all getting up in the 70s and the 80s, and it's pretty hard to remember, really.
Miss Burns, you've lived at this house all of your life, you've said.
All of my life, as far as I know. It's the only place I can remember ever living.
Do you have any very early memories of the house here?
The house here?
Hmm.
We had a lovely group of children in the street where we all used to congregate, and Red Rover and what else did we play? Hoppy and all that. But we used to get out there on Saturday afternoon, and our parents used to go to the trots, and we all used to wait till they'd gone, and then we'd be up tricks. But we had lovely people. You know, one of the boys went down on the Sydney, which was rather sad, and one of them died recently, but we've all sort of kept up. There's still some of the children that the lad that lived on the corner, he often comes to see me. He's, I think his wife owns the Wembley Hotel and he lives there, but we all still communicate. And when the school have an anniversary up here, we all turned up for the 100 years centenary, had a lovely lunch, and we all talked till they came back here, and we talked till about 5 o'clock in the morning. And every Sunday night we had a jam session. We either came here to Keith's place in Hammersley Road by the school, or the Sawyers round in Duke Street, or the M Roses, but every Sunday night we'd all go.
When you say a jam session, were there different people who played?
No, we just got around the piano and yes. sang. And no, we didn't have anything like that. My father was a great musician. He was a wonderful pianist, so was his sister. But no, we used to have the pianola here.
So not just as a family, but as a group of young people also would
sit around. Yeah, all the boys and the girls, and we'd all come round here, so they'd say, whose night is it tonight? And we used to go round to Hammersley Road to Keith's place, but his father wasn't very happy with the noise. We'd say, oh, it's your turn. And we had some wonderful nights. And as I say, four or five of them are still around and still, you know, keep in touch. You know, Keith came round for my 80th birthday, and I saw this morning where he's 80 next week, so I must remember that. But he still talks about the old times, and his dad gave him an old Fiat car with no blinds on the side and a real old timer, and he used to pick us up just to go around the corner, and we all used to pile in the back of it, and we had a great time. We really had some, you know, wonderful nights.
You said that all of the ones who'd been to school together, which school was that?
Well, I started at Subiaco. Mm-hmm. This was at Subiaco School.
That's the one that's still there now?
Yeah, and we had the little school and the big school there, but all the children around here at that time went to Subiaco School.
And you would just walk from here,
I'd expect. Just walk, and we used to come home for lunch, funny enough, which they don't do now. And we had a sports day up there, and we'd all go in the sports. And I was saying that today, all the fathers, the mothers, the grandparents all turn up for sports day in their suits and white shirts and black ties. Nowadays, nobody came to watch us run, and we ran in bare feet, not flash Nike shoes that they do now. And nobody would be there to say, you know, well done or anything. That was just part of your routine. But we ran in bare feet. And now I go with the people next door and their children. I go to all the sports up here at the school. And, you know, they're all dressed up and they're all arriving in their Jaguars and their what have yous.
And what memories do you have of the school? I mean, were the teachers very strict? How big were the numbers of the classes?
Well, I showed you the photo of the school, which I think we had about 47 in the class. And one of the teachers lived next door. We had a Miss McGovern, we had a Miss Armstrong, Miss Bryant. Mr. Llewellyn was the headmaster, who was a lovely man, very lovely man. We used to love going to school and come home for lunch, and of course we all got our free milk every day at school, which they don't get now. But the school, we had a little school and a big school, And as we got older, the girls could do cooking in the cooking school, and the boys would do carpentry in the carpentry shed, which they've now got rid of, the carpentry shed. They've now got rid of the cooking class. They don't have anything like that now. They've got swimming pools, and that's more to the...
At the primary school, a swimming pool?
They've got a swimming pool, big swimming pool.
Oh.
They have all their sports up there. I always go to the sports with the kids, because all the kids in the street are in it, and they say, oh, you're going to come and watch us run. And they're all very good.
So you've maintained that interest all the years with the children in the street, whatever generation?
Yeah, some of them are new, but some of the old ones, there's none of the older ones in the street, I would say. But I still see some of the people that lived in the street. 70s. There's a little house just down the road from me, a little wooden house. It's still there actually, but they have done a lot to it. But that was our cubby house, and we all used to meet in there and cook potatoes, and then we'd be off to play fox and hounds or something like that. Had a wonderful childhood with the boys and the girls in the street. Quite a few of them are still alive, and I still see them.
In your own family, who was there? You had two sisters, I think.
I have two sisters. I've still got one sister, Nancy, who's... Nancy's 78. And I lost my other sister, Isla, 50. Lovely girls, wonderful, united family girls.
So you're all in together in the community activities?
Oh, yeah, we're all in together, all naughty. But it was fun.
So when you were down in this little house, your cubby house, what did you do down there?
Well, you know how you play that game where you all go off and hide? Well, that was the base in there. And if we used to, they had a little oven in there. It only had two rooms in it, which I think it's still got. And we used to cook potatoes in there. You know, just put them in the oven and then eat them as they came out. We had a wonderful time.
It was just an empty house.
Yeah, it was empty, yeah. It was awful, and it's still there, funny enough. It's rented out, and they've done quite a bit to it, but it's still there, so it's been there for years and years. But two or three of the boys that were in the street are still around, and I still see them, which is nice. We go back over things we did in the old...
And when you finished at Subiaco, where did you go to secondary school?
I went to Perth College. Nancy was still at... here because she was younger than I was, and my eldest sister went to Perth College. Then Isla, she left school and she stayed home. She didn't ever go to work. We always had a maid, you know, in the family. But Isla stayed home. Nancy went on. Nancy didn't go to Perth College, which she was very upset about. I think probably because my dad thought, well, is it a waste of money? I always said it was a waste of money, me going to college. But Nancy never went to college, which she was very upset about, and still is.
So how did you get to Perth College?
I used to walk up and catch the tram, walk up Hammersley Road to Rockaby Road and catch the tram into Barrack Street, and get off the tram at Barrack Street, go into the fruit shop, buy 3 pennies of fruit, an apple and a banana and a pear, and then we used to catch the tram on the corner of Barrack and Murray and go to Perth College in Mount Lawley and catch the tram home. Sometimes we'd walk to save our tram fare and buy an ice cream or...
Walk from Perth?
We used to walk home from Mount Lawley to Perth.
Yeah.
But we often, when I started work, we walked from Subi to town.
And where were you working?
I was then working in the National Bank in Murray Street, which I loved.
And you would often walk from here?
Yeah,
down
into town,
to Murray Street.
Had a lovely time in the bank, loved the girls. We had used to ride our bikes everywhere up to the hills and have a picnic, rode to Rockingham.
That was with the bank girls?
Yeah, lovely crowd of girls, but things were a lot tougher then because the war was on.
So what age were you when you started in the bank?
Oh, good question. I had my
It doesn't really matter. I was wondering how far...
I would say probably 17. I've still got the letter from the bank saying, report for a medical. Your salary will be 7 and 6 pence per week, should you be accepted. And I had to get about 4 references to get in the bank. And in the bank, we weren't allowed to go to the trots or races or anything. We're gambling. We were involved with gambling. And I had to get minister's reference. I think I've got 4. Funny enough, I got them out the other day to look at. I was cleaning out a case and they were all pinned together. So I kept them. I put them in a plastic envelope in my history stuff. Not that anyone... They're just funny to look back on, you know.
Yeah, yes. So if you started at the bank at 17, does that mean you went right through to leaving year?
No, we did a junior in those years.
Yep.
I went to City Commercial College before I started work.
So you did your junior then, did City Commercial?
Commercial junior there. And yep. They put you in their office for a couple of weeks and then they send you out to jobs. But some of the jobs, they sent me to a garage and I had to do the petrol and everything. And my father said, you're not stopping there. You're not doing that sort of work. I haven't paid for your education to be pumping petrol. So that was the end of that job.
And what were your duties in the bank?
I was virtually the typist, more or less, to the manager. Did all the bank advances for money and all that. I loved the bank. Met lots of nice girls in the bank.
You say you used to cycle all the way to the hills?
Yes, we used to go to... We've got pictures taken up at Rolling Stone where we rode our bikes. I've got pictures where we did something ridiculous and... We got all these Roman chains around our necks and we're pulling things along on this girl's farm. Those girls are still around. The bank still invite me to their Christmas lunch. We have a lunch in Myers in Melbourne, in Forest Place, you know. But I don't go now because by the time you go to the bank one and you go to one with the other lasses who we go to Christmas lunch every year, we started off with... They call them the Rottnest girls, but I don't know how I got into it because I don't go to Rottnest. I didn't go to Rottnest with them, but I'm friendly with them all, and they're all single from the war. And we started off with 14 of us, and we lost another one last week before last, and I think we're down to 4 this year. So whether we'll abandon it or not, I don't know. There's only 4 of us left out of 14, and we're all single.
So your friendships,
still are, except one.
So your friendships have lasted a lifetime.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But you didn't stay in the bank terribly long, did you?
Beg pardon? I stayed in the bank for 5 years.
Yes, and
then my dad took ill, and staff were hard to get because it was wartime. Couldn't get staff, and one of the girls was leaving to get married, so very reluctantly I went and worked in the office there. Never worked so hard in all my life, but. And, I mean, we would rush home for lunch. My mother would have the lunch on the table because my dad couldn't spare the time. She would hear the car come up, lunch would be served, and I would be in this, just eat your lunch. So, well, come on, we've got to go. And I said, Dad, I always got an hour for lunch in the bank. No, there's work to be done. Back to work. He was a workaholic.
Yeah. So it was a hot lunch you came home to?
Yeah, we used to get a hot lunch. But, yeah, he was a workaholic. They worked very hard in the bakery.
So if he started, did he personally start at 2 or 3 in the morning?
Oh yeah, both the boys did.
And what time would he finish in the afternoon?
He'd be lucky if he finished by 6 o'clock at night. Never went away for school holidays, wouldn't know what school holidays were. Never had a break until he got really not well and he went down to Augusta. He loved Augusta. That was his, and he bought about 4 or 5 blocks down there. And of course, after he died, they kept writing to us and saying, you know, you've got to clear the blocks and you've got to do this. We can't have growth on them because of the fire risk. And Mum and I were just, you know, Dad had gone then and we were left with all these blocks. And the guy said to us, well, why don't you sell them? You're going to pay off all this money to have them done every year. We sold them for nothing. actually now Augusta's absolutely blooming. I think the hotel's built on one of the blocks that we had. But I've been down, I went down with a trip once and went and had a look around all Augusta because some of the people were still there that I knew. But you get to know people and you get to meet people and... Well, she... My girlfriend in the bank who's Faye, who now lives in Singleton all by herself, and she rings me about every 2 weeks and or she comes up to Perth and that, so we're very close friends. I've got lots of close friends because I love people.
When your father died, how did that impact on the bakery?
Well, my uncle was left to sort of do the hard work and that, and he was devastated when my dad died, and he... No, hang on, before, I've messed you up a bit there. Before my dad died, he knew he was getting on and that Uncle Jack didn't want to do the administration side of it because he was getting on, so we took in a Mr. Ledger as manager, Ted Ledger, who managed it, and then when my dad died, he was there to do all the, you know, and he did a lot to, you know, rebuilding the place and sort of modernising it and all that. But, no, the day my dad died, I can always remember, he died in St John's on his birthday and the bakery was closed for the funeral, and the funeral came past here with the flag on it and the his war badges, flying badges, which I've still got. And I've got his Gallipoli medal. But it's funny because we've got nearly all girls in the family and girls aren't sort of interested in
war.
War, or not so much war as sort of history in that. My sister's twins, the one that died, her twins and her son are very much into, you know. You know, must write it down for us. You must tell us about it. They're always on it. But and they're always here. They call this home. They're always calling in. The girls call in. And John called. He just rang me. You haven't got that on, have you? Have you?
How did your mother cope after your father died? You were still living at home then.
Yeah. No, she didn't. She took ill and she was in bed for years. And I sort of. My sisters always used to come one day a week and stay with her. And that she. Really took to her bed. I don't think she really ever got over it. And Nancy used to come one day, Isla used to come one day, and we had a lady who was Mrs. Button to come in and sort of, you know, help in the house and cook the meals and all that. But, and then my mother finished up by going into a nursing home. Well, she went into the gardener and they suggested that she needed, you know, and she was didn't like being on her own at all, so I could never go out at night or anything unless I got somebody to stay with her. And she went into Kimberley and I went every day, sometimes twice a day, lunchtime I might nick over.
And, well, is this while you were working as well?
And I went every night over to see her, but she... felt secure there, but she was lovely. I had two of the best parents you could ever have, so I was lucky. And I was spoiled. I will say I was spoiled.
So you started working in the bakery in the mid-40s, early 40s during the year.
Yeah, yeah.
And stayed, during the war I mean, and stayed there until it was sold. About when was that?
I left there 22 years last week. I left in... When did I turn 60? In December.
82?
2 months before I took all my leave because I didn't like it. Well, everybody says it'll be the same when Tip Top take over, you know. But nothing's ever the same. So I finished up in the... August, I think. Yeah, and I would have I had leave up till December when I would have turned 60, so.
And so you stayed on for some time after the sale?
Oh yeah, I stayed on for a long while.
Years were you with the bakery altogether, and about when did it change hands?
I would say I would have been at the bakery approximately 40 years, and they changed hands in, I think it was 1959, 59, 60.
Why was it sold? Had it become too much for your uncle?
Well, yeah, and I think there were no boys to carry on. The boys had the only two boys. One of the boys, Jack's son worked there for a while and Bob's son worked there for a while, but they didn't. And I mean, it was getting big, and it wasn't like it is now where women can carry on. I mean, you wouldn't think of it, anybody. I mean, I was virtually in the office and that was it, but I worked very hard. Never knew what it was to have Saturday afternoon off for a long while. Used to have to wait till all the carts came in before you could finalise the money and that.
When you shifted over to the bakery, did you earn more than your bank 7 and 6 a week?
No, probably less. Less, because I always used to say, if you're in the family, you get less and you work harder. That's their motto, I think. Sometimes I got away, I got to my tennis, which I loved. I can always play myself playing in the final of the singles. And I said then, I've got to get there, it doesn't matter how long, you know, we've got to wait. Somebody else will have to wait today because I've got to play my singles, which I won. I was very proud. Now that was 1958, I think.
Yeah. So you played tennis for many years, I believe. Was that with Subiaco Tennis Club?
I played at Onslow Park, down here in Onslow Road in Shenton Park. And then a couple of my friends went to Cottesloe and they said, why don't you come to Cottesloe? And I said, oh, I think I might. So I went down 2 or 3 times and just played. And then I joined and I was at Cottesloe for about 40 years. I've got the book on Cottesloe, the history of Cottesloe Club. Met lots of people there who I'm still friendly with. In fact, up until last Christmas, I always go back for their Christmas lunch and their Melbourne Cup Day and all that.
So when your mother was bedridden and you were responsible for her, were you still able to keep up your own interests?
Yeah, not so much. I didn't really go out a lot at all at night. I always seemed to want to go, but I never worried about boys, never worried me or anything like that.
And I believe Probus was among your other interests.
Yes, I joined Subiaco Probus as a foundation member 13 years ago. And the only meeting I've missed was when I went in to have my hips done, and I missed out then. But I never missed their meeting on a Friday. Loved at it once a month. Go on all their trips to the country. I've seen more of the country since I joined Probus. We went to New Norcia last Friday and had a wonderful day up there. We've got Probus again this Friday where we all take, instead of having a speaker, we take something that we do or knit or sew or something.
So it has a great variety of activities.
Oh yeah, and they have trips. We have a birthday lunch every year, which is lovely. We have a Christmas lunch at the Sheraton this year. We have trips to Kings Park. We had a couple of nights to Albany and Bunbury, which we went on and had a wonderful time. And you meet a lot of new people because they're all people who are more or less around your own age and all interested in the same. I mean, I'm a sport man. I just love sport. I will sit up all night if there's a football match on, if there's a cricket match on, or anything. Tennis, well, I watch every cup that's on, all the Wimbledon, watch Wimbledon.
I believe it was only hip replacements that stopped you playing tennis.
Yes, 1970 I stopped playing because of hip replacements. And it's the one sport that you can't go on playing.
Aye.
But I love tennis, love tennis. And I love all sport. I love sports and people. That's my...
I read somewhere that you were, had some involvement with the Lead Light Festival. Can you tell me about that?
Oh, well, they came round and asked me could they take photos of the Lead Lights for the Lead Light Festival, which was...
Could you tell us a little bit about the lead light in this house? Because it's quite unusual.
Well, the one on the front door is supposed to be a copy of that wedding photo there of my mother's, of the wayfarers. And it was taken off that, I believe. The kookaburras on the bathroom, I don't know where they came from, but they have been there since the house was built. And they've never been... altered since. They are the original lead light windows, the same as these are all the original lead lights. They've never been changed.
And so that was recognised by the Lead Light Festival?
Yeah, and they came and took photos of the front door for the for putting in the West Australian to advertise the festival, which starts from up here. And I always go on the tram, and when I get on, the lady starts to give the, tell them all about it. And then she said, oh, why don't you get up and do it? You can do it better than me. And I said, no, I've paid my $5. I'm happy to go for the ride.
So it's an annual event, is it?
Yeah, it's every year, yeah. They actually wrote me a little thing, which is hanging on the door, actually. There's a lass at the back was running it a couple of years ago. I think she started them off, okay, and they put it in the first year, and then it's been in every year. But I think because you light up for the festival, but I don't think they come up the drive. And if you don't come up the drive, well, you don't see the front door, which when it's lit up is beautiful. But a couple of my nieces generally come over for the festival and go for a ride in the tram.
And what other organisations have you belonged to around Subiaco that I might have missed?
I was a member of the football club, but I'm not now because I don't. Used to go to the football every Saturday that I could with my dad, who was, he was secretary of the football club, Subi, for years, and played one game, so I've read in their history. Didn't find that out till the lass bought this book to Probus, and she said, have you seen the write-up in the Subi football club? And would you believe it, they have got that. When they want, there was a year when all, I don't believe this, but this is what it says, there was a year when all the hot cross buns were burnt black, so they gave them to the Subiaco Football Club to practice goal kicking with. Now that is printed in black and white. Now I'm sure that's not right. I have never heard that until she brought the book with me. And she said, your father's name's in it. And I said, is it really? And she told me to read it, so she lent it to him, and he had played and had been secretary for years of it. I know he loved the football because we used to go with a bag of peanuts when we could on a Saturday.
Didn't you discover something else about your family through a history book, your grandfather being on council?
Well, he was on, I found out, going to see the council's display of history in the Subiaco library upstairs. And I found where my grandfather, who I never had the privilege of seeing because he was gone before I was born. And the first page was a photo of all the councillors and the mayor. And lo and behold, William Burns was in the left-hand corner as one of the councillors, and it had to be in 1902 because I searched for the history. Now, nobody knows where the photo is. Nobody's got the page, except the council have got a book starting from 1903, which is the year after. But I said to the lady, no, I saw this photo. So she got the list out of the drawer of councillors back to 1902, and his name was on the list. But nobody can find that photo, which I would give anything for.
I noticed that you live quite close to what is now the Subiaco Theatre Complex. Do you walk through there to some of the shows?
Yes, I do go up here to the theatre. And we used to have good concerts on a Sunday. They've done a lot, really, for Subi. But I was looking back yesterday, and we used to go to the markets, you won't believe this, every Friday night with a little cart my father made me, and which I went with my mother to the Subi markets, which were where the where the library is now. Fire station was on the corner, then the markets, and we used to go round the markets and pick all our get all our vegetables and eggs, everything fresh. And it was a treat for us Friday night, and we'd come home with our little cart full of veggies and eggs and everything. And they had a council chamber sort of backed onto the markets, and they had a window, and they had a flower show up there. And my parents had gone to Sydney for the Master Baker's convention, because at that time my dad was President of Australia, of the Master Bakers and that. And he had a lovely garden, so we children picked these flowers and took them up to the flower show, which was in the council chambers. And we got first and second prize, but we weren't game enough to go and collect the prize because we'd taken the flowers out of his garden. So they'd put the window up from the council into the markets, and we were up there, so we put our heads in the window when they announced we'd won the prize. And my sister said, "You go." And I said, "No, you go." And I said, "I'm not going." She said, "No, we'll be in trouble if we go." So I don't think we went, but we got a certificate, which we later gave to our father, a blue certificate for first and a red one, which I've still got from the flower show, and that was in 1937.
Miss Burns, is there anything else that you'd like to tell me about that I haven't mentioned yet?
Oh, just tell me a little thing. Most of the drivers and the staff that worked at the bakery were there for years. Some of the drivers would have been there 40 years. Harry Smith, who was an absolute lovely gentleman, knew all his family, and my father treated them. They were treated like family. And when my two sisters got married, Harry always used to drive them to the church. He always drove the wedding carts and obviously came on to the wedding after. But very loyal servants we had for many years. And then we had a float in the procession that was through Subiaco in 1952, and we had more or less an oven made, not a real oven, but a temporary oven made up, and we had a dough maker and a baker, Charlie Tanner and Merv Johnson, who threw out hot real rolls to the people, because everybody in Subi thought that was lovely, something for nothing, which you don't often get.
Yes.
What else have we got?
You're saying that your family was friendly with the courts?
Yes, very friendly with the court, with Sir Charles and Lady Court. And when Charles was away in the Second War, my father made a cart for his children to be from Father Christmas. And when Rita passed away, she sent me this photo of the three boys with the cart and said she thought I would like to keep it, which I have done and still have. But she was they were a lovely family, the Courts. He was trustee of the bakery, Charlie Court, and auditor and everything. Very fine man. He always visited my mother at Christmas after my dad died. Came every Christmas day about 9 o'clock. I had to get up early to have the house in tip-top shape for when the Premier arrived.
He was Premier then.
Yeah, he was very, very, very good to me. Often rings me up, not often, but now and then rings me up just to see if I want any help or anything. But I think he's passed, probably gone down to live at Kudnup now, so I don't, hear much from him now. But no, he was very friendly with my father. Very fine man. Lovely family.
Could you tell me how you came to get your first car?
Well, I used to stand outside the bakery with my father and look at all these cars arriving over at Comet Motors over the road, because they used to put them in lines ready to be cleaned and polished. And I'd say, "Oh, I'd love one of those." And I said, "One day I'll save up and I'll get one." And about a fortnight later, we were standing out the front and saying, aren't they beautiful, the cars, and that, all Morris Minors. And he said, that one's yours. And I said, I nearly, that was the most, I was that excited. And I said, oh, I'll pay you back, Dad. Not that I ever did. But I said, this car was mine, and I was just so excited at the time. So I was able to go to the tennis club in my car. And very, not many of the girls that I went with them were, you know, had cars, so it was really...
Before that you used to cycle, did you?
Yes, I used to. I wasn't allowed to have a bike, so I used to borrow the little boy down the streets when everybody was out, get underneath the bar, because it was a man's boy's bike, little bike, and I could reach the ground, and he used to have a good ride and then go and put it back. And I used to do the same thing at the bakery on Dixie, who was there at the bakery for years and years, very old servant, and he used to have a bike with a seat on it. So I used to, when my dad wasn't there, I used to hop on this bike and go for a ride round the block.
Why were you not allowed to have one?
Well, my father thought they were too dangerous. So when the war finished and I left the bank, I cashed my war certificates and went and bought a bike at Kells in Rockaby Road, Subiaco, a Flying Arrow. And we went everywhere, went on lots of trips with the bank girls, went everywhere on bike, loved bikes. I still love bikes. I've got one in the shed, but I don't think I'll be riding that again.
With your hips.
About.
Miss Nick Burns, thank you very much for your time this morning.
My pleasure.